I want you to understand how some marginalized people feel, particularly those of us who are Palestinian and Arab and or Muslims. Our existence is controversial to people. My breathing in this world, just me standing here telling you that I am Palestinian, is in of itself controversial. Let me tell you what controversial means. I speak truth to power. I challenge the status quo. My entire 25 years of my career, it has been putting my body on the line for the things that I believe in.
That's Linda Sarsour, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Linda Sarsour, A Palestinian American Speaks. It's axiomatic that anything dealing with Palestine is deemed controversial. And if it is a Palestinian-American woman speaking out, even more so. Look at the vitriol and death threats directed at Michigan Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib. She's a Palestinian-American and is standing tall for her right to speak out, as is Mariam Alwan, a Palestinian-American student at Columbia. She's one of the many Students for Justice in Palestine organizers in the horizontal alliance between that campus group and Jewish Voice for Peace. There is pushback. Asna Tabassum, a first-generation American Muslim, was chosen to give in the commencement speech at USC until she was canceled after being targeted by pro-Israel groups. The sheer scale of death and destruction in Gaza and the ongoing expansion of illegal colonies and violence in the West Bank has moved the narrative. In communities and on campuses across the United States, Palestinian-American women are breaking down Orientalist cliches about being meek and submissive and taking the lead in peace and justice movements. One of those voices speaking out is Linda Sarsour. She's a community organizer and racial justice activist. She's one of the most widely known Palestinian-American women for her advocacy on behalf of Palestinians. She's been called every Islamophobe's worst nightmare. Her activism spans a range of interests. The New York Times says she has tackled such issues as immigration, mass incarceration, stop and frisk, and the New York City Police Department's spying operations on Muslims. She has helped organize major women's marches and Black Lives Matter protests. She's been hailed as shattering stereotypes of Muslim women. And she has told her critics, "Stop telling me to go back to my country. I'm from Brooklyn." She spoke at Colorado State University in Fort Collins in early April 2024. And now, Linda Sarsour.
Listen, folks, I'm just going to get to it because this is an important moment. I feel kind of triumphant just being and standing on the stage like this actually happened and I'm here. And I want people to understand why I came here because I have been to over 100 universities just since COVID happened. So this is not in my whole career, right? In my whole 25 years of organizing. This is just in the past few years. And I'm tired and I'm exhausted. And as you all know, I come here unapologetically Palestinian-American. And I want you to also to understand that it's the greatest honor of my life to be Palestinian. But it's also right now in this moment, I have to get up every day while my people are being genocided. I have to get up every day to work, to organize, to speak, to be my ancestors' wildest dreams manifested while my people are being slaughtered. And so I promise you, any chance I can get to say, I'm not available, I need a little break, I will take it. But I came here because this is SWANA and Arab American Heritage Month. And I came here for SWANA and Arab American students so that they know that they are seen and that they are heard and that they should be celebrated in every college campus in this country. No student at any school should ever feel small or feel like they have to be on the sidelines or have to feel that any university gets to decide during your Heritage Month who the person is that gets to come and celebrate who you are. So I came for you. I'm used to this idea that me existing in this world. So just I want you to understand how some marginalized people feel, particularly those of us who are Palestinian and Arab and or Muslims. Our existence is controversial to people. My breathing in this world, just me standing here telling you that I am Palestinian, is in of itself controversial. And so oftentimes when people are coming to a college campus or they hear that, I'm not even gonna get into what other events are happening at your school today. We're gonna keep that conversation for another day. But me, my friends, apparently I'm controversial. Let me tell you what controversial means. I speak truth to power. I challenge the status quo. My entire 25 years of my career, it has been putting my body on the line for the things that I believe in. During COVID, I got up and did something that people in this room did for me. I got up and I fought for a woman that I did not know. I left my family in New York City during a global pandemic, and I moved to Louisville, Kentucky, a city that I had never been to before. Because I heard that a black woman got shot and killed by the Louisville Metro Police Department during a global pandemic while she was an emergency ambulance worker, EMT worker. And I said to myself in New York, what? So we're just gonna move on and allow for a black woman to get murdered in the sanctity of her own home and we're just gonna let it happen? No, my friends, I got up. I'm not a person that just says free the people or says fight for justice. I'm gonna use every tool and resource that I have at my disposal to do what I believe. And so I moved to Louisville, Kentucky for 5 months and I built with local people. And till today, I still fight for Breonna Taylor. Till today, I still fight for Breonna Taylor. I saw babies being ripped out of their mother's arms on the US-Mexico border. I didn't just sit at home in New York and say, my God, that's so terrible. Why would you take these babies from their mother's arms? I also didn't say, keep the families together. Because, you know, the people were saying, keep the family. What are you saying? Keep the families together in the same in detention centers? I said, free the people. I went to the US-Mexico border. I visited those detention centers. I mobilized. I organized. I'm a person that gets up and does something about the things that I believe in. After the election of Donald Trump back in 2016, I didn't just sit home and be mad about it. I didn't sit home and cry about it. Through my trauma as a Muslim American, knowing that a man just won an entire election almost on the demonization of the communities that I come from, I got up and organized. I stood up against fierce opposition, violent white supremacists across this country, death threats to my life, to my family, people who put my home address on the internet. And everywhere that I went could have been my last day. But I wasn't just fighting for me. I was fighting for marginalized people all across this country. Because in every generation, there has to be some people that decide to say, I'm ready to risk it all. And I'm one of those people. So what makes me controversial is that I dismantle a lot of stereotypes about the communities that I come from. People were looking at me saying, this whole thing don't make sense to me. I keep telling them I'm from Brooklyn, that's part of it. This is just how we do in Brooklyn. I can't help it. And I happen to also be Palestinian, so the blood that runs through my vein is the blood of an oppressed people. And so that liberation, that fight, that quest for liberation is just something that moves me every day. And so for 25 years, they kept telling me, you're too much. You talk too much. You're a troublemaker. And I say to people, let me ask you a question. Do you think Dolores Huerta is a troublemaker? Do you think Rosa Parks was a troublemaker? Do you think Dr. Martin Luther King was a troublemaker? How about Malcolm X? Think about all the people in the different communities that you come from who fight for freedom and fight for justice and fight for liberation, and explain to me whether you think that they're troublemakers. Troublemakers are people that ruffle feathers, people that challenge you in moments of despair and devastation. I often ask people, when you see me, a person that is like me, who is Muslim, who is Arab American, who is Palestinian, witnessing an entire genocide of my people right now. This is not a figment of my imagination. This is not an opinion that I have. 40,000 plus people have been slaughtered in the last 6 months. There are children who are experiencing forced starvation, and I went to Egypt. Not somebody told me, not I saw it in a video. I went myself during the holiday season when many of you were spending time with those that you love. I was in Egypt. I saw 1,500 trucks right outside the border. So I want you to imagine that if you're a Palestinian in Gaza and Rafah, you could look through the border and see all the aid, but you're inside starving. You're inside without food. So I just want to understand from people, what am I supposed to feel? And what am I supposed to say? And how am I supposed to act when there is a forced starvation of a people, when there is an abundance of food and resources that can get into them? The food is there. The money is there. The resources are there. And there are children that are literally dying a slow death of starvation right now. And they're not just metaphorically my people, right? Because in the movement, you all my people. All of you are my people. I'll fight for each and every one of you. You're all my people. These people happen to be literally my people. They're my family. They're the people that I love. They're the people that I share blood with. And so I hope that you expect us to be outraged. I hope that you expect that the same Linda Sarsour who's going to stand up to a police chief in a police department that murders a Breonna Taylor or murders a George Floyd or murders an Eric Garner, we could sit here for days and name everybody. The same Linda Sarsour that will stand up against any president of the United States of America, that will stand up against any mayor or anyone in power who harms marginalized people, is going to be the same Linda Sarsour who's going to criticize the state of Israel, who is oppressing and bombarding and massacring my people. See how that all connects? See how that all is consistent? See how that all makes sense? And so I say that not really to you, but to our students, to our Arab American and Palestinian students who are afraid to speak up. And I came here to say to them, we won a battle together. Because I came here to stand up to, for you to say, say what you feel. Stand up for your people. Do not allow people to silence you and silence your pain and silence your trauma and your quest for liberation for your people. Black people should be able to stand tall and fight for black people and fight for the communities that they come from. Anybody in this room should be able to do that. But when we need courage, and we need people who are going to give off courage, and that's what I do because that's what I have. I'm not afraid, and I'm not going to be silenced, and I'm not going to be intimidated. And here's what I'm going to tell you. It's been almost, 57, 58 years since the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. And everybody will tell you, Dr. Martin Luther King, what a great man. What a wonderful man. He was such a good man. Everybody commemorates Dr. Martin Luther King. I'm sure they do events, MLK week at your school or MLK days or whatever you do. And everybody is like, Dr. King is the best thing that ever happened. Anywhere from the right wing all the way to the end of the left, and everybody in between. How is it possible that Dr. King appealed to all the whole political spectrum? How is that possible? It's not Because that wasn't actually the context that Dr. Martin Luther King was organizing in back in the 1950s and 60s. In fact, 66% of Americans at that time did not agree with Dr. Martin Luther King. And if Dr. Martin Luther King was such a good, peaceful man, why did he get assassinated? Why did they firebomb his homes? Why did they threaten his life? He was such in a space of anxiety in the last 18 months before he was assassinated that he foresaw his assassination. When he got up in his last speech and said to you, "I see the promised land, but I might not get there with you." Why not? He was a young man. He was only in his 30s. Why did he believe that he wasn't going to see the promised land? Because he knew his time was up. That he got to the point that they were just going to give him, this was his threshold. Once you go above the threshold that society wants to give you, it's trouble for you. So he knew that. But then 57 years later, we're all commemorating Dr. Martin Luther King. We forget that Dr. King was labeled the most dangerous man in America by the FBI director at the time, J. Edgar Hoover. They infiltrated the organizations that Dr. Martin Luther King organized in and was a part of. You watched you've all studied Black history. They brought the dogs out. They bought the water hoses out. They bought the clubs out. When the people got up to organize for things as fundamental as voting rights. And here we are, decades later, still fighting for voting rights in the United States of America. So my point is that 40 years from now, I already know how history works. I've studied it too much to know what the cycle's gonna be. 40 years from now, someone's gonna say, "Oh, Linda Sarsour, she spoke at my university." Right? And even the ones that didn't want me to be at your university are going to act like they were with you when I came to your college camp, because that's what they do now. I know how this plays out. We demonize and criminalize people, and then we want to give them their flowers when they're no longer here. I'm getting my flowers now. I'm getting my flowers while I'm here, just so you all know. You know, we live in this very interesting country. And I was a little taken aback by, apparently, the theme this year is democracy. My mind is blown, just so you know. My mind is blown. And then did you notice when you walked in here? Was it just me? Because I might just be triggered by myself. There's a whole green sign that is as tall as you and me that says something about free speech. I don't know if, I'm not sure what's happening. So we have a sign that says free speech, and then we have a theme that is democracy. Let me explain. Maybe we're not on the same page. Democracy is about being in a free society with free exchange of ideas. That we all can be across the political spectrum, and we all have an opportunity to share what we believe. That's my understanding. Democracy is the system in which we all get to participate. I don't know if somebody wants to correct me if I'm wrong, because maybe I just read a different book. That's what it means. So in a theme where there's democracy, during an Arab American Heritage Month, a SWANA month, why are we in a situation having to understand why we're having a whole journey? I spent more time talking about this event than anything that I've organized in my whole entire, I can't believe that I'm even here right now. But I'm glad I am. You know why? Because there's people in this room that did something. There are people in this room that I don't even know. And some of them I just met today. If you remember when Bernie Sanders was running in 2020, he had a new mantra. You know, every time he ran, he got some new thing going on. In 2020, there was something profound that he said that people latched on to, and it was really something that meant a lot to me. And I said, "Oh my God," I said, "Bernie, I'm stealing that one, because that's a good one." Bernie asked us a question, and this is what happened here at this university. Bernie said, "Are you willing to fight for someone that you do not know?" That's what he said. So there were people at this school, students at this school, who never met me personally, who don't know who I am, or maybe they know of me, but they don't know me, who were willing to fight for someone that they did not know. And that's the kind of joy that I felt knowing that. And then I got to meet some of them in person today. And I want you to know that you are what gives me hope in this country. You are the potential of these United States of America. The most powerful form of fighting for justice is when you are willing to fight for someone that is not like you, that is not of you. And that's what we need in this country. I've said this many times before. We have to make a distinction between vehemently disagreeing with someone, right? Because that's a thing. Even people who are my people, we're going to disagree. Because that's life, my friends. We're going to disagree. There's a difference between you disagreeing with me and claiming that my existence and presence makes you unsafe. Come on, my friends. We could do better than that. We could do better than that. We can do better than that. Sometimes I want people to reflect around this concept of safety, because there are real people who actually are unsafe. There are real threats to safety in the communities that we come from as different types of marginalized people. I mean, this event is part of Sexual Assault Awareness Month. There is real violence in our communities. There is real Islamophobia. There is real anti-Semitism. There is real homophobia. There is real ableism. There is real, like, harm, my friends, that is happening. And so if we start saying, for example, the Linda Sarsours of the world are what is making you unsafe, we're in big trouble. Because I promise you that when things get hard in this country, when things get ugly in this country, when people are getting harmed in this country, the people that you will see on the front lines will be people like Linda Sarsour. And so that's what we did. So you could disagree. I'm not telling you that I need you to come along with me on my journey and my ideological journey. I'm saying to you, respect my experiences. Respect my identities. Respect my histories that I come from. And that is what I want you to do for your SWANA and Arab American students on your college campus. We are hurting. Noura came up here. Did folks realize that Noura is Palestinian? And I met other Palestinians on this college campus. So you think that it's normal for Palestinian students to just get up every morning, go to class, submit their assignments, and act like it's any regular old day? Her people are being slaughtered. She's a young person trying to understand, why does this world not value the life and sanctity of life of Palestinians? That people can see children starving to death, and our country has no control or claims to not have control when we know they have all the influence to stop the horror that is happening right now. So I want you to look over sometimes at your fellow Arab American and SWANA and Muslim students. SWANA stands for, someone can help me here, because I have, that's a new one for me, because we are evolving to include more people. Basically, it's Southwest Asian, North Africans, Arab American heritage is another, other people say MENA, which is Middle East, North Africa, but you get the point of what this particular group, and this group is could be Christian, Druze, Muslims, Jews. We are not a monolithic community, but there are things that we share. And a lot of what we're sharing right now is a lot of grief. I'm grieving, my friends. Like, I'm grieving, like, yes, I'm here with my back straight, and I'm standing up for what I believe in and who I am, but I'm hurt. I feel harmed in this world. I want to know why. I get to sit every day and watch video after video after video of blown up bodies of mothers crying over their children, and then I'm the one that's controversial. It really is something. And there's a root cause here, my friends. Sometimes we have to question the things that we believe. What makes me controversial? It really is because I'm Palestinian. That's part of it. And it's also because I have the audacity to speak up, and I'm going to tell you why. My Palestinian immigrant parents chose to immigrate to this country. That's a choice that my parents made. My parents did not want to raise their children under a military occupation. And for any of you who are in this room who are parents yourselves, or those of you who even know your own parents, I'm sure many of you would agree that your parents would do anything for you and sacrifice everything for you. And so that's what my parents did. They left their parents in Palestine. They left their grandparents, their siblings, their neighborhoods, everything that they loved, because they rejected the idea that they were going to bear children under a military occupation. So when my father had the opportunity to immigrate in the land of the free, right, in the land where we apparently could be whoever we wanted and worship the way we wanted, my father said, that's where I'm taking my children. He could have went anywhere else. He could have went to a different Arab country. He could have went to Kuwait. He could have went to Lebanon. He could have went to Iraq. He could have went anywhere. But no, my dad said, I'm going to this place called the United States of America, because that's where I know my children will thrive and get the types of things that we would never imagine getting under a military occupation in Palestine. So when you ask yourself, why is Linda Sarsour this way? It's because I'm going to make my parents' sacrifices and journey to this country worth it. That's why. I am going to honor the sacrifices of my parents and my grandparents and great-grandparents who gave up those that they loved so that they could come to this new land and get the opportunities so that we can look back. Because remember, right? Sankofa. You got to look back, my friends. A lot of us here are either immigrants or children of immigrants or great-grandchildren of immigrants, or can trace our ancestry back, even if you're tracing it back to enslaved African people. People sacrificed for us to be here. Every privilege that you engage in today, whether you have voting rights, whether you are engaging in access to healthcare, reproductive healthcare, there's so many things, even access to higher education, somebody sacrificed for you. My parents don't have college degrees. My father has a fifth grade education. My mother also didn't finish high school. She actually was in her last year of high school when they started arresting people in Palestine, and my grandfather had to pull her out of school because he said that if they get arrested, they would have to pay a 5,000 shekel kind of like bail. And my grandfather whispered to my mother and said, listen, if that happens, we can't afford it, my sister. We can't. I can't have you in that situation. So when my mother only had 5 months left of school to finish, she dropped out of high school. And so everything that I do, everything that I strive for, is to honor the sacrifices of my parents and my grandparents and my great-grandparents. And I hope that you, as you're accessing higher education, as you are trying to be the best that you can be, you are honoring the sacrifices of people that came before you. And I wouldn't be an organizer if I didn't tell you to do some things. You know, we were talking right now about democracy. My friends, we are in trouble in this country. And I keep telling people all politics is local. And we have a lot of apathy in this country. A lot of people say, oh, I don't vote. Let me tell you about voting for me. Voting is sacrilegious to me. Something, it means a lot to me. It's not about the people you're voting for. It's about the act. You know, when I go to the polls to vote, you might think this is deep, but this is how I think. I have two thoughts when I'm walking to a polling site. One is, somebody shed blood for me to do this. And I'm every step I take into a polling site, I am honoring the sacrifices of those before me that gave me the opportunity to participate in this democracy. So that's the first thought that I have. The second thought that I have is, it ain't about me. It ain't about you all the time. Because a lot of time people in this country participate in democracy from a very self-righteous place. You know why? Because the United States culture teaches you to be self-righteous. It teaches you individualism. I don't come from a culture of individualism. I come from it takes a village. I come from community. So when I go to the polls and I look at, I say to myself, I don't like any of these people. That's what I say. That's the first thought I get. But then I go to my second thought, which is, question that I ask myself, which one of these people is going to be the least harmful to marginalized people in this country? That's what I ask myself, because it ain't about me. I might be just fine. Some of you might be just fine, but there are other people that are not going to be fine. And it is our responsibility to, at least if we are in the privilege and place and role, to reduce harm or alleviate some harm, even if it's a little harm. You better believe I'm going to do whatever it takes to alleviate some harm if I have a role that I can play in it. So participate. There are incredible people in your communities that are running for office. Oftentimes, when we see a candidate who's a person of color or who's a member of a marginalized community, you know what we think? They always say, oh, they don't got a chance. Why? If we don't believe in us, who's supposed to believe in us? Support people that you are aligned with. Vote for people. Don't worry if they got a chance or not. Because if everybody that worried they didn't have a chance actually voted, they might actually have a chance. But we're too busy talking instead of doing the actual work to build leaders in our community and to ensure that they are providing the right representation for our people.
You're listening to Linda Sarsour, A Palestinian American Speaks. This is Independent Alternative Radio. For copies of this program, call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org.
All politics is local. Some of the most harmful pieces of legislation that are happening across this country are not happening actually in Washington, D.C. They're happening in your state legislators across this country. Repro rights, anti-LGBTQ laws, anti-healthcare, anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, they're all happening in your state legislature. So you gotta get up and go to the polls for 5 minutes. And for those of you who remember the days of the Arab Spring, some of you were very young. That was a time where the people were fighting for democracy in the Middle East. Didn't work out for pretty much all of them. But they believed in it. And guess what they were willing to do? They were willing to stand up to snipers just so that they could have the right that you have here to just walk into a polling site with nothing. You don't got to worry. You just walk into the polling site. These people were willing to stand up to snipers and to autocratic regimes just so that they can have the right that you have here. So I honor those people too. Participate and support local organizations. In this area, there are organizations that are doing incredible work. There are people in this room actually who work in Palestinian solidarity. There are people here that are working with at-risk youth. There are people here who work at food pantries and know that there's a homeless population here. There's so much incredible work that's happening in the local community. And stop making excuses. I'm so busy, Linda, I study, I got papers to do. I know you do. Trust me, I was where you were 25 years ago. But you gotta have at least an hour or two, my friends. You gotta put your beliefs in practice. And I always tell people all the time, I don't like when people say I'm an activist, because I'm not an activist. An activist for me is an individual who believes in something and shows up at the right place at the right time in places that align with their values. An organizer is someone that actually deeply participates and organizes other people to also join along. So get up, participate in an organization, join, be a member of an organization that does something that you believe in. They're around, my friends. They're not hard to find, even in an area like this one. The other thing I will say is that we have this idea, somebody told us, that we don't got it. We always believe that the opposition has more than us, that we can't compete with the opposition, people who oppose our values. And so college students will say, Linda, I hope you're not getting to the part about the money because I got no money. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. All of you, every once in a while, get yourself a nice cup of coffee, go out to lunch with a friend, maybe go out to dinner with a friend. We all have a little bit of that. I always say to people every once in a while, in order to really be and feel purposeful, you gotta put your money where your mouth is. So that could mean $10 a month, that you find a local organization that does something that you truly believe in, and you say, every month I'm gonna put $10 on an organization that's working on something that I believe deeply in my heart. Because that type of consistent behavior, the reason why I say $10 a month, because this ain't the I drop it and feel good. It's something that is a part of who you are. This is what you do. This is what your commitment is towards. And that type of consistency, if we had it all over this country and a whole lot of people just did a little something, we would really be in a better place, my friends. So think about that. What organization means something to you that you can give $10 towards every single month? I don't know about folks in this room. I'm old, And I know I'm very grateful. I come from a family with some good genes, my friends. My mom looks fabulous for her age. She, you know, and I actually got my good genes from my mom's side. My dad was like gray-haired when he was like 25. But I came out like my mom's side of the family. I grew up in the age of, remember the computers that's where the box computer. Like, I was still around at that time. I was dial-up AOL days. I was around. So I'm one of those generations that straddles like the iPhone, Apple, Mac. But I also had those types of computers, and I had dial-up internet. So that's the, I lived at a time where we didn't have cell phones. I got a cell phone when I was like 25 or something. So I'm one of those. And the reason why I bring that up is because now we find ourselves in the digital age. We communicate through DMs. We look at screens all day long. The reason why I'm not an activist and I'm an organizer, because I like people. I like to be outside. So most of the time when you see me, I'm outside. I'm not a social media influencer. Find me on a street corner. I will register you to vote. I will be the lady that knocks on your door. That's what I do. People think I'm wild that during election season, I'm excited about knocking on people's doors. Because actually, it's amazing to be with real human beings and knock on people's door. And let me tell you, they open the door for me because they're like, what is this lady doing outside my door? It's, you know, it's, I'm an interesting person. And I don't mean that they even know who I am. Just look, you knock and people look out the window and say, what's this Muslim lady doing outside my house? It's very curious. The curiosity kills the cat. And I get a lot of door opens, which is why a lot of people love when I work on their campaigns, because I got a lot of open doors. My point is, get to know one another. I'm tired of this, and I saw this on this college campus too. You already know what I'm talking about. You walking in the hallway, you don't even know who's walking around you. Sometimes put your phone down for a minute. Sometimes when you walk into your classroom, look around and say, damn, I've been sitting for 3 weeks next to people right here. I never even asked these people what their names are. In your own class, there are people that will tell me, I asked somebody today. They said, you're right. Before you leave here today, go up to somebody and say, you know, I seen you around this college campus, but I never actually asked your name. My name is so-and-so, what's your name? This is the kind of world that I want to live in. Because people will say things that we've been in, you've heard this mantra before. It's something that we say often in part of Black Lives Matter type spaces, racial justice spaces, where they say things like, we must love and protect one another. How are you supposed to protect me if you don't know me? I want to live in a world where you know your neighbors. There are people right now that will tell you, I've lived on the street for about 10 years. You're right, Linda. I'm thinking about it. I'm visualizing it. I only know like one family on my block. Why? Someday you might need somebody, right? Being able to live. Community requires you to know the people that are around you. That's the point of community. And there's something about this digital age that has stopped that. And the polarization that we're feeling today in this country, some of it has to do with the digital era. Of course, the misinformation and disinformation on the internet, but also there's this lack of people just being human and being like, hey, how you doing? What are you doing? I saw, oh, is that your dog? How cute. Like regular, like human being things. Just so you all know, I am that lady. That is me. When I moved to a new house about 3 years ago, and my children who are basically in your age group, my son's gonna be 25 in June. I have a 23-year-old daughter and a 19-year-old daughter. The first day that we moved into our house, you know what I did? I knocked on every door in my block. I said, just want you to know hello. I'm your new neighbor. I live right there on the corner. And even my neighbors thought I was crazy. Because that's just not a thing people do apparently anymore. But you know what? I'm going to tell you this last story about the importance of neighbors. About 9 days after the horrific attacks of October 7th, a man drove his car into my house. I have the video on my phone for anybody who wants to see it. And, you know, I was shook up, you know, and thank God it was just they just basically crashed into the front of my staircase, then proceeded on my very tiny lawn, because, you know, we don't really have lawns in New York, and then immediately crashed into my car, Nissan Pathfinder. The whole side of the car was totaled. And, you know, do the usual thing people do. You call the cops, whatever. I just got to the house. I didn't have no security cameras. I got nothing. And because I had already met my neighbors, my friends, I have a neighbor who lives across the street from my house who I know for a fact is not aligned with me on a lot of political things. Why? Because he straight has a Trump 2024 sign right outside his house. But he saw the police and came running over to me. He said, what happened? I said, this is what happened, my friend. Look at this. He said, I'll be right back. This man has a state-of-the-art surveillance system outside of his house. He was so proud of himself that it finally came to good use. And he was so, had his back straight. The cops were there. He told the cops, he said, how do you want me to give it to you? Showing it to them on his phone. It was crisp, clear, got the license plate number, everything. And he was like, you want me to go inside? I'll put it on a USB, whatever. And I'm just, and I really, like, I'm not going to lie to you. For 1 minute in my life, I looked at this person. I said, that's my neighbor right there. I promise you, if me and him got into a deep conversation, we probably would be arguing in the middle of my street. But in that moment, he was my neighbor. And I knocked on his door. And I had a whole conversation with him for like 15 minutes while my children were looking at me from across the street like, we don't know that lady. She's not related to us. So get to know one another. I promise you, one of the most powerful things that has kept me up and kept me going amongst all the things that I have experienced in my life, in my semi-short, long life that I had, is people. I got deep relationships with people. And guess what? I built some right here at the school. The minute I leave the school, my friends, I got friends here. I got people who I could call, people I could share with, right? Human beings. This is not just people who invite me to your school because and that's it and I just never know them ever again. I'm still connected to people in every campus in this country that has ever invited me. They are my people. I remember them. Sometimes I'm like, oh, something happened in like this state. I text people and I say, are you okay? I heard this happen. Just happened the other day. I was at, you know, St. Mary's is in Maryland. And I was like, are you cool? Everybody's cool there after the horrific, you know, bridge situation. They were like, no, we're good. People are like, sometimes people get caught off guard that you even like, what do you mean? This, out of all the people in the world, you're texting me, asking me, us, how we're doing. And that's the kind of world that I want to live in. So I just want to say thank you for this courageous invitation. And I feel sad saying that bringing someone like me to your school is courageous, but it is in this context. Thank you for every single person who did not know me, who fought for me to be here. Thank you for those of you who decided to show up tonight when you could have been anywhere else. And I want to again say, again, because I want people to know that I have deep admiration and appreciation for people who do their jobs with love. Why do I need this drama in my life? I don't get paid that much. Seriously. They could have moved on. But they made this happen because they knew that it wasn't just about me. It was about the reason why we're all here today. So I hope that our Arab and Swana students feel loved today, that there were people fighting for you on this campus. This event is about hoping that you left here feeling seen, feeling loved, and knowing who your allies are. And guess what? You got plenty of them on this college campus. Plenty of them. So anyway, thank you for having me. Please welcome my beautiful friends, Jasmine and Belkis. Give it up.
Thank you so much for being here today. We're so grateful that you are joining us in the midst of so much grief and your ability to still show up so unapologetically. How can staff, faculty, and students support Palestinian students and other students participating in activism during this time?
I'm just going to go back to the theme, my friends. I'm going to feed you what you're feeding in the school. Democracy requires the active participation of everyone who wants to be involved. And democracy is not about one issue or two or 10 or 20. It's about every issue. So there are students on this college campus that feel very strongly during a critical moment in history where there's an active genocide happening, the least that the school can do is allow these students to organize, to have conversations, to put forth their ideas, their solutions, build relationships together, and use this campus as a way to also educate, because not everybody understands what's happening. And so democracy requires that institutions, right, cultivate those spaces, right? Because students have only some power And so we have to understand the dynamics of power in a university. And so I'm saying, just give them space. I'm not saying agree with them. I'm not saying that take their position. I'm saying give them the space to be their full and unapologetic selves, because that is how students are going to academically achieve. When they are at a university that sees them, gives them space to be themselves, and allows them to speak of their pain, of their trauma, but also of their joys. And this is an event where we should never have been in a space of anxiety or kids worrying about whether this event was gonna happen. This was supposed to be a day of celebration. You were all supposed to come here today and be like, yay, we love our SWANA and Arab American students. But then we had to go on this journey that reaffirmed what the students were already feeling, which is being unheard, unseen, and oftentimes also feeling further marginalized than they already were before even this last 6 months. So that's all I'm saying, just give them space. And that is something that you, in fact, as a university, that is your job, because these students, whether or not they're on financial aid or have scholarships or pay out of pocket, that's part of the deal, my friends, just so we're all clear. You don't just come to a university just to get a degree. You come to have amenities available to you, rooms available to you, services, staff, support staff, who are supposed to allow you to explore your identity, explore who you are and what you believe. And the way that you also do that is by inviting speakers to the school. Let me be clear about what kind of speakers, because some of you might learn some things later after this event. I'm not gonna put it out there here. I believe in academic freedom, and I believe in free speech, and I believe in the right that the school has to bring anybody who believes anything to the school, but there gotta be a line drawn. There's one line that I have, and I said this at CU when some of you were there. The line that has to be drawn is that no speaker should be allowed in a school that takes a position that a certain group of people should not exist. If that's your position, then you're not welcome on a college campus. But if you have different ideas about racial justice, policing, you're not immigration, I don't even care what your position is. If there's students that want to listen to that, they should have that opportunity to listen. But if there's a speaker that literally campaigns against the right to exist of a particular group of people, they should not be welcomed on college campus.
Yes. Mike. Okay. Well, thank you so much. And thank you so much for that insightful answer. And we have so many more questions. You left us with so many great nuggets. But unfortunately, we are getting close to that time. And I want to respect everyone's time here and your time here as well. So again, I just want to say thank you so much for the information that you shared. And thank you so much for our little small conversation.
We might have one more.
Okay. So I had the pleasure, along with a couple of people in this room as well, had the pleasure to see your speech at Boulder. So thank you for sharing there as well. And a question that kind of came up was, how do you navigate and take care of yourself through community care when you're faced with obstacles like social justice, battle fatigue, Islamophobia, and misinformation? And how do you know when to take a step back?
I love that. That's actually a great question to end on. So for folks who are at Boulder, I'm going to give you context to this question because this is an important context. Oftentimes when people see organizers, student organizers, or you see activists in your community, you always say this thing to them like, you need self-care. Like, take care of yourself, right? A lot of people say that. Like, chill, take care, find something that, you know, to take care of yourself. And so what I want to explain to people about that is that while you may be well-intentioned, that's actually not a thing you say to activists and organizers. I'm gonna tell you why. Because if your intention is to say to this activist or organizer that you're overwhelmed, that you're doing too much, that you look exhausted and you look tired, you're now giving them another burden by telling them, now go organize something to make yourself feel better. So the reason why I have changed that perspective is I believe in this thing called community care. So if you have a student organizer, or maybe it's a faculty, or maybe it's a activist or organizer in your community that's been nonstop, 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 instead of saying to them, do something for yourself, why don't you do something for them? Right? Why don't you say to them, you know what? And I'll give some examples. This is nothing like, you don't got to get too wild here, my friends, right? Like, let's say there's an organizer in your community who has children. If there's any night where I can watch your children, so you can just go out and have a nice, you know, time, go out with your friends for dinner, or just go somewhere and be by yourself, I got you. I know you're out every night organizing in the community. Can I bring dinner to your family? A few of us want to either buy some dinner or make some dinner for your family. Or maybe a few of you get together, if you can, and say, maybe a massage locally is like, I don't know, I'm just making this up, $70. And then a group of you come together and each of you puts in $5 and you give somebody a gift certificate. You say, you know, you need a massage. Force them into a place where they have to be by themselves and be taken care of. A manicure. I don't know. These are just little things. Like, people sometimes underestimate the little things that we could do for people, right? Showing up somewhere and say, I got you on a cup of coffee. And sometimes it's even as simple as sending somebody a text message and saying, I see you. I know this work is hard. I hope you feel appreciated. I know that this work is selfless, because a lot of times there's people in this room that have been organizing here around ceasefire in this area. They're doing it for free, my friends. This free work. At some point, you might want to say, I got you. Buy somebody a little book, a notebook, something. These gestures, sometimes you have no idea how much they mean to somebody. And so we're going to move in this world from this idea of self-care. And that doesn't mean that you don't get to do good, great things for yourself. But in the context of our community work, we have to come out of a different mindset to say to people, I'm willing to do something for you. And that way you show people that not only are you willing to help take care of them in that moment, but it's a different kind of acknowledgement of the work that they are doing. Because I'm not going to lie to you. Sometimes I ask myself, you know, we're all human beings, my friends. Sometimes I'm like, do people see what we try to do outside over here? Do people see what's going on? And I think sometimes when I get, like, I got a beautiful gift from some friends here, and it meant the world to me. It really did. I was overwhelmed. I literally got a package in the mail, and I couldn't believe my eyes. And it was the most thoughtful thing. They bought me, you're not going to believe this, something called Gifted Root. And it's a company in the United States of America that, I don't know if this might not be the right agricultural term, so excuse me. So I'm going to use an animal term. They breed olive trees. And they breed specific olive trees, not just any old olive tree. Their olive trees are birthed from the oldest olive trees in the world, which are in the hills of Lebanon. And so this gift, to show you the simplicity sometimes of things that we do for others, this is a gift that I know, as if you know anything about olive trees, they will live for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And so while I'm long, long, long gone on this earth, when my great, great, great grandchildren are long gone on this earth, that olive tree is still going to grow, because that's what olive trees do. They are so deeply rooted that they will live and live and live almost perpetually. And so again, that might not be a thought that occurred to somebody, but it was the most meaningful gift that I have ever received in the last 25 years. And I've gotten some good gifts, my friends, but that was the best gift that I ever got. So no more self-care, community care. Awesome.
You were just listening to Linda Sarsour, a Palestinian American Speaks. She spoke at Colorado State University in Fort Collins in early April 2024. Linda Sarsour is a community organizer and racial justice activist. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. We're an independent, unembedded nonprofit in our 38th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature voices rarely heard in the corporate media, such as Rami Khoury, Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, Chris Hedges, Arundhati Roy, and Noam Chomsky. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, Linda Sarsour, A Palestinian American Speaks, and for the classic Edward Said book, The Pen and the Sword, call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or go online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us, 1-800-444-1977. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening. We go out with Rola Azar, performing Palestine Lives.
دق الرمح بعود الزين هي هي فلسطين واحنا شبابك فلسطين هي هي يا قمر نوهل هي هي فلسطين وضو الكرة الأرضية هي هي فلسطين ما خلقنا تنعيش بذل هي هي فلسطين وخلقنا نعيش بحرية.